Are you able to hear me good?
Hey, I can hear you loud and clear, Tommy. What's up, man?
How's it going?
It's going. Just kind of got done feeding my lizard, so I have a black and white Argentine tegu, so got done doing that and ready to hang out and have a good time.
I wish I had a lizard.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. It takes some getting used to, you know, making sure they have the proper food and humidity requirements, but a tegu is definitely one of the smartest lizards you'll probably ever own.
Well, I guess we'll get started. Everybody, welcome to the KGD podcast. Today I have Josh Fata with me today.
Hey, what's going on?
So I actually made a post asking about people who would want to be on the podcast, and you were recommended.
Mm-hmm.
And you did hit me up. So why don't we just we can start off with you telling me a little bit about yourself, like where you're from.
Yeah, so obviously my name's Josh Fata. I'm from actually Nashville, Tennessee right now. So I'm actually kind of coming at you from there. I've actually worked in the professional music industry probably since 2016, I want to say now. So I've been I started off as a CCM and worship artist, which if you don't know what CCM means, all that means is contemporary Christian music. And then I moved on to do some pop, country, rock and roll. So just I do a little bit of everything.
Right.
So yeah, that's a little bit about me, where I come from. I'm actually, believe it or not, a Michigan native. So I moved here. Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in a small town called Eaton Rapids.
I've never been there, but I know of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, my family is all in Michigan, and we're actually coming up there to do a show later on this year, everything all permitting. So
where at?
Right over in Lansing, actually.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be, I think it's a location called The Fledge. I haven't been there, and I don't think I've been there for like anything in particular in a long time, but one of the promoters reached out to me and said, hey, would you guys be interested in coming, you know, doing like a benefit show? And I said, hey, you know what? It's in our calendar, and with everybody needing live shows nowadays, I said, you know what? Let's do it.
Why not?
Exactly.
Lansing was actually the last place I did a show at.
Yeah. It's been, I know each state, as they've all opened up from COVID regulations, it's been a little rough getting the live music game started.
Right.
But 2021, I think everyone's just, I mean, Nashville especially, every major artist has hit up Nashville. The Bridgestone Arena is just packed for the next probably the rest of the year.
Right.
So we just get hit with it. And as states are opening up, you know, everybody's pleading like, hey, let's bring some live music back, you know, cause music just really, it's an emotion, you know, like people get connected to music. And I think it's just really healthy that people are getting that back in their homes and in their cities.
We definitely need it. We need it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been begging for it. I've been wanting to hit the stage more. I've only done like one show since COVID hit, man.
I hear you. We did one maybe last year, one major one, and it was on a farm actually way up north by Charlevoix.
Wow.
They just wanted to invite a bunch of people to a farm because they had enough space to let everyone social distance, whoever wanted to, and just have a good time. So that was the only show I ever did.
That's the only one you've done?
Well, that's the only one last year. But
oh,
yeah.
Oh no. Since this all started. Okay.
Yeah, since this. No, gosh. Oh, geez.
In total, how many shows do you think you've done?
Oh, man.
Too many to count?
Probably too many to count. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, like, I don't really know when my first show really would have been. It just kind of, you pick it up and, you know, sometimes you get young people, you know, they'll start out and they'll say, hey, I started off on a worship team, or I started singing in coffee shops, and you know, then it just kind of grew from there and went to, you know, oh, now I'm playing like my own shows, or I'm opening for someone else, you know, because I mean, music, as you probably already know, is just all about who you know. And sometimes you just meet friends and go tour with them, you know?
Right. it's quite a world once you really get into like once you start making music and then you actually get to the point where you're doing shows, it's a whole different world versus when you're, you know, recording your music at home and then you start showing your stuff to people. And the next thing you know, you're on a stage performing in front of people.
I've joked with a lot of, because I run actually an artist development program actually as well, which we just started this year, kind of branching out and helping teach the newer generation. And one of the first things I always tell people is, you know, music is, it's a very expensive and addicting hobby. You know, you just, more gear if you're a producer and, you know, musician, and then like you just keep doing song after song after song, and it never gets old. The process never gets old.
When it comes to your music, did you start off working as a group with other members, or were you a solo artist at first?
Yeah, so I was actually a solo artist at first. And so really Josh Feda as a band, because you hear me use on my Facebook and Instagram and all that, you hear me use the word we a lot. And it's because if it was just me, then, you know, I mean, there's so many more people that go into the projects. I want to make sure credit is given where credit is due.
Right.
But when I first started out, actually, I started at a small studio in Michigan. We made a couple of songs, and were they great? Meh, probably not. But were they, you know, were they satisfactory? Absolutely. When you first start. Exactly. You know, and from a songwriting perspective, you know, I started getting into that. And then I said, well, I need to get better at my craft. So how can I do that? So I actually connected with a wonderful group. I always recommend them. They're actually Full Circle Music. Now, they're located here in Nashville, but they have a learning community that is just phenomenal. I mean, if you connect with people on there, you'll figure out really fast, you know, who's serious writers and who's not. And man, you'll just make some wonderful friendships. And so over time, I spent, oh gosh, how many years with that? Probably a couple of years, but over time I actually did lead to my first songwriters retreat, which was here in Nashville. Sat in a room with 14 other writers. And I remember,
wow,
they said, all right, we're going to put you in 4 co-writes. And I said, oh gosh, here we go. Cause these co-writes were going to be with pros. So these are people who are writing the Grammys, who are writing the Dove Award and award-winning producers, you know? So for me, I was a nervous wreck. I went in the room probably with these same 14 writers. I didn't know if they were new. Some of them could have actually been veterans, and they were, you know, and, you know, one of the things I'll never forget is, you know, so I had the chance to write with a guy named Sam Tinnes, which if you don't know who that is, he actually does a lot of film and sync. He has his own stuff as well. You can always look him up. I know one of his songs went TikTok viral recently. And then the second one I got to write, which actually that song got to move on, was from a guy, his name was Tony Wood. So me and I think 2 other girls and Tony Wood sat down in a room and we wrote this pretty killer song, kind of similar to like Natalie Grant, like a very soul, like gospel song.
Right.
And it really fit their voice. And they decided, you know, a year later they contacted me and said, hey, I'd really love to take this song. Do you care if I, you know, if I cut the song? And I said, oh my gosh, like I'd be honored, you know? And then, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask. So like when you guys are doing this, you guys are all writing one song together. Like that was like some sort of assignment you guys had to do, or.
Mm-hmm. So part of like being an artist, a lot of people actually, one of the biggest hurdles they have is they say, I'm a songwriter, but my songs, I just don't know how to get them to the next level. And I always tell them, how many co-writes have you done? And they'll say, well, I always write my own songs. And I said, that's awesome. But you know, a co-write, 99.9% of the songs that are hits out there were all co-written, even co-produced sometimes too. And so, you know, when I first started out, I was the guy. I sat and I wrote my own songs. And then I said, you know, let me, you know, it takes a lot to get in a room with co-writers. You're basically wearing your heart on your sleeve is what we call it. You're being vulnerable. You're telling your story and you're saying, hey, I'm going to dare to suck. That's a famous saying we always use. You might say a phrase or say something and just say, you know what? This might be a really bad idea, but what do you think about this? It's all serving the song. Because if the song is amazing, whoever cuts it, I mean, y'all are going to benefit. I mean, that's really what it comes to. You know, and it just alleviates the pressure. So Yeah, I started at first writing by myself, and then I branched out and got co-writers, and I don't think I ever will go back to writing a song by myself again.
I've always wrote my songs by myself.
Yeah.
I've just normally, normally I'm now getting into where I'm getting somewhat comfortable producing my own beats, but I'm
Yeah.
still not entirely like a god at it.
Yeah, for sure.
I wouldn't even say that the beats that I make now are even release worthy, but it's still a progress, so I'm trying to get to the point where I can write on my own beats.
Yeah, that's always definitely a challenge for sure. I always tell people, like, as far as the production goes, actually, speaking of Full Circle Music, they also offer not just a songwriting mastery course, they also have a production mastery course for anybody that needs. I mean, it is a cost. It is something that's costly for you. It's always a sacrifice, but it is well worth the time if you're ever interested in that.
How would somebody get into something like that?
The music industry really is pretty relational. So for the most part, it is a little bit about who you know, but with Full Circle Music, they do just let you can hop onto their you can look them up on their Facebook or their website. I think it's just fullcirclemusic.com, but don't quote me on that. But yeah, basically Seth is actually the guy who runs it, Seth Mosley. He's a actually, are you familiar with the band Skillet, a rock band?
Yeah.
So he actually works very closely with them and also another band that's popular out there for King and Country. So he works with those two guys. Really a genuine guy. It's actually, I cut my first Nashville song from a song that him and I and one other artist co-wrote together.
Wow.
Yeah. He's such a nice guy. Like I would highly recommend anyone, if they're wanting to master their craft. I mean, it always takes some type of sacrifice to learn. It could be a sacrifice on your humility side. It could be a sacrifice on your financial, but it'll pay off. I didn't get to Nashville just by, sitting in front of a computer and going, "What do I do next?"
Right. A lot of people end up getting stuck there. Like, I'm not gonna lie, that's me. I sit here in front of my computer a lot, and I'm on Ableton a
I love
lot.
Ableton, yeah.
I even recommend Ableton.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's brother is a producer. Amazing. He's really good at what he does.
Yeah.
He's the one that got me on Ableton.
Yeah, Ableton is wonderful. Really any DAW system works amazing for everyone. It's the biggest thing is, and we always talk about this in the production world too, you don't have to have necessarily the best of the best equipment
Oh,
to
absolutely
actually
not.
get good quality. I mean, I literally just recorded vocals in someone's apartment the other day for one of our more recent songs coming out, which hasn't released yet. There's no teasers, but it's going to be called The Good Fight, which is an awesome song. It's a more rock vibe. But anyway, so I sat in this room, like an apartment building, it looked like, and I was like, "What is this it?" This guy soundproofed the whole room and was like, "Yep, we just kind of do it like this." And I just did the vocals like that, and there it went.
And it still sounded great.
Oh, it's killer. Yeah, the producer that I sent the vocals, because it's kind of co-produced a little bit. I did the vocals with another producer who actually focuses more on pop music, EDM and all that. And then I sent it to the guy who was doing the song, and he goes, "Dude, way to kill it." And I was like, "I tried."
I tried. That's the best thing you can do is when you go into some place, just try your best. My first time going into an actual studio. My song wasn't even done. I didn't even know I was recording. I was going with a friend, and he was getting a song done from what I knew, and he said that he wanted me to come with, and I was like, sure, this is a legit studio. I wouldn't mind checking this out. I ended up getting there, and he just drops it on me, hey, I'm gonna need you to spit a verse. And I was
Oh
like,
man.
why? Why would you do this to me? I'm just sitting there speed writing on my phone. But
Yeah.
it was an experience. It was awesome.
I will say I've never run into anything like that before. But that definitely would be pretty intense. That's almost like music industry times 20. I will say 9 times out of 10, like if I've sat in a room with someone, we usually co-write it, get like maybe a demo at the most, just to get an idea. It doesn't even have to sound good. And then when we take it to the producer, we're like, "Okay, this is kind of the idea." Then they'll do the whole, you know, pre-production and find your vision for your song, all that jazz.
Right. That's what I like to do. When I get a beat that I really like, I tend to write as much as I can. And then if I think that, like, okay, this is what I really want it to sound like, then I'll start recording up a demo for it, get kind of like the idea, and then I will show it to my producer.
Yeah.
So, like, this is kind of the vibe I want. And then once I finish it, he's already got it down.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. It's always such a joy. That's the process of writing a song. You start, you sit in a room, maybe you co-write, maybe you sit by yourself, you know, and then, you know, you look at the finished product and you're just like, man, this is something that would not have come into existence if it wasn't your voice. That's one of the hardest things for artists to do is like, man, I really love that guy Harvey that plays pop music, or man, I really like Fall Out Boy or Panic at the Disco, and like, wow, but I can't sing that. And I'm like, well, you can't. You're right. You're not Harvey. You're not Fall Out Boy. You're not Panic at the Disco. You can't be that. That's already taken. You've got to be you and be able to own it.
You yourself really can, you know, find your own style. Write a song, you can stick with it, and it won't matter how hard you try to sound like somebody else, it's just not gonna sound right.
It'll be nerve-wracking for anybody that does it, for sure.
I feel like that's a big issue with a lot of people that I personally know. They want to sound too much like someone else. It doesn't sound like the way they want it to sound, and it just kind of breaks their spirit a little bit, and it just kind of pushes them away from doing what they want to do.
Yeah, I think that's the danger for artists, is they play what's called the comparison game. I played it. I would know. I was like, man, I'm just not up there. I'm just not that. It took me, when I wrote my first single, like I never just walked in the room and said, oh, I'm Nashville ready. No, I still don't even think I'm ready, but yet I get calls all the time. But anyway, aside from that, like I didn't start out like that. You know, I started out probably just like you or just like anyone else. And I said, this is super nervous. I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. I don't really know if I'm going to be successful. And I mean, I always encourage people and say, you know what, if your first song is released, don't put such a high expectation on yourself like that.
Oh, you know, for sure.
Your first song won't be a hit. If it is, I mean, holy crap, you're awesome.
You were obviously born for it.
What a prodigy, right? Yeah, no, I mean, the average person, I mean, doesn't release their first song. And I've watched some artists come up and I'm just like, man, I love your voice. And man, I wish I could have that voice sometimes. But, you know, and then I go back and I go, you know, there are people that hear my voice and say, wow, I wish I could do what Josh is doing. And then I feel all guilty, like, oh, shoot, I shouldn't have been playing the comparison game like that, you know?
Right. So your style and my style are completely different. can I ask who, like, your main inspiration was to base your sound off of when you first started, before you actually found your very own style and have been, you know, pretty well known for it now?
So
who inspired you?
Absolutely. So believe it or not, like, so I grew up definitely listening to a lot of Christian music, but the sound that influenced me is actually a band called One OK Rock, which is a Japanese American band. They originated from Japan and then moved over to the US. And there was just something different about that sound. It was still kind of like a rock vibe, but it was able to fit into today's commercial music, which usually has some type of pop element. I mean, if you've listened to the radio, you'll figure that out real fast.
Right.
But so I started with One OK Rock, and then over time, I've actually morphed some of my my likes and stuff. So now I've listened to like Panic at the Disco. I mean, I've mentioned them before. Harvey, a band called Why Don't We as well. Because I'm starting to move a little bit more towards the pop.
I can hear it when I was listening to your music.
Yeah. I'm slowly. It's been a journey, but I'm trying to find a way to kind of mesh into the same commercial industry, because that's where I'm from. And I always tell people, when you're going for commercial music, there is definitely a formula to it. But at the same time, if you're not shooting for commercial music, and this is definitely the part, you know, I always tell artists, if you're starting out, like decide whether you want to do commercial or not. Because you do not have to do commercial music, because sometimes it might take away from your art. Because the commercial business is very much, I mean, it's half business and half your art, really. I mean, you got to be able to cater to an audience somehow.
Right. I feel like most places, like no matter where you go, it's if you're in the hip hop industry, like myself,
yeah,
or if you're in, you know, the more pop side, like you are, there's usually going to be a business aspect of both. Like no matter what genre you're doing, I feel like there'll be some sort of, you know, business.
I actually had one of my friends, I can't remember, produced or wrote with. Are you familiar with a band called NF?
I know the rapper.
Yeah. I think he is a rapper. Don't quote me. But I have a lot of friends that actually do Christian rap or secular rap, whichever one, and it's always a joy to, you know, I've developed a like understanding and appreciation for almost every genre that's out there, really. There's a market. I don't know. It's just, I love it.
So with your side of everything, are you a fan of like nowadays or even old school hip hop, or do you try to like not really get involved with that side of things? You're just like, that's not really me. It's just not the message that I really care about. Or are there hip-hop artists that you actually respect and actually listen to on a regular basis?
You know, there are a couple that I do listen to on a regular basis. Lecrae is definitely one of them for sure. That's kind of grown on me over the years. That might be just because I've heard about him a lot. And then there's also KB as well.
Right.
And then another guy that just came out of Florida, his name is Zonti. Well, that's his stage name. I don't really know what his real name is. But... Those ones have actually been very, like, I'm like, oh, okay. It's funny because I first heard of these guys at a live performance. Because for me, when I'm listening to, like, rap music or hip-hop, it used to be it didn't really, like, for some odd reason, hit me. But as I've started listening and growing, like, even on the commercial side of music, I've learned kind of, oh, this is what a commercial-sounding rap or hip-hop song sounds like. And I actually kind of like it. I mean, I have no problem putting a banger in the car and just having fun with it, you know,
just bopping along.
Cause really with rap and hip hop, I feel like the most important things are your speed, dictation, and what's the other one? Rhythm. There we go. Those are the,
right.
That's where I was going. The rest of it goes into production. You know, you might have a sound effect or pull back something or slow down. You know, it's just how fast or how slow do you want, or can you go? One of the two, you know, dictation, you know, I want to make sure everyone understands what you're saying. Unless you're Eminem and you want to bust that. What was it? 15 seconds he did. I can't remember how many.
What? Was it Godzilla or was it Rap God?
It might have. I don't remember what song it was, but it was the one where he basically did this whole 15-second didn't stop. It was like it made a record at one point, like a personal record, like within the music industry for like being one of the longest, like times going rapping a specific verse without taking a breath, like that kind of thing.
It sounds like Rap God.
It might be that one. That sounds familiar very much.
I remember when that song came out when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually ended up downloading it illegally. Please don't tell nobody I said that. I got it an hour before the release date. And wow. I was sitting in my kitchen on the floor with my headphones in. And that song came on. And I had to throw my earbuds off. I was like, I can't. That's way too much.
Yeah. It's a lot. Like, I mean, but that also is a thing like about, like people can always, especially in today's day and age, because back then it might have been a different story. You can't really like, I mean, you probably could have Googled lyrics, but especially in 2021, if I want to know what the lyrics mean, I can just Google it. Other than that, I might just be vibing.
Genius. If you ever want to know what an actual lyric means, you just go to Genius, man.
There you go. Yeah.
You just click on the bar and, or, you know, the line in a song, and it'll mm-hmm. give you a description of what this line means.
Yeah, for sure. I've always found it really cool to, like, go back and listen, especially because rap usually tell, well, at least the ones that I've listened to, they always seem to tell a story.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually follows one of the guys in my band. I know it's funny because you hear, like, what my sound is, and then you find out my guitar player actually loves metal music. And it's always a fun conversation because they go, wow, how do you go from playing pop music, but you actually like metal music? And so over time, I've gotten to know him, and he shared some of his, you know, metal songs with me. And I'm like, wow, this is interesting. And he goes, well, it follows a story. So it'll tell a story throughout the song. And I'm like, huh, well, that sounds kind of like almost what rap sometimes does. And they're like, yes. And it's funny because the two, I wouldn't really say they're controversial genres, but genres that don't get looked at much in commercial music is specifically like rap and metal.
Right.
You know, and it's just interesting to me, you know, learn about all these different, I'm still learning. Apparently there's different types of metal.
Oh yeah. There's lots way of different too many. Types.
And I'm sure it's like that in the rap and hip hop world too. I mean, there's so much.
There's a lot, especially when you start getting to, as you were saying, subgenres.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know some people don't know it, but are you familiar with the rap group Insane Clown Posse?
Yeah. Yeah, I am, actually.
Very, very ICP. Vulgar. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very vulgar. But what mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know is that both the guys in the group are Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And they claim that their music is Christian rap.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
I don't know about that.
I would say usually, and I know a lot of people, you know, give Christians, especially in today's day and age, a little bit of a bad rap. But I tell people a Christian will usually be probably one of the nicest. They should be one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. You know, they love their faith and all that stuff, but they also love people and, you know, stuff like that. And I wouldn't put them in the Christian rap or Christian hip hop category, but
absolutely,
it's
not.
Funny actually. It's funny actually. Even in the Christian world, you know, when we sit down and do co-writes, what do? When we're trying to find out, I mean, how do you learn how to write a hit song, right? You sit back and you look at somebody who did it. In the rap and hip hop world, I mean, I'd be a fool if I didn't look at people like Eminem and say, okay, what did he do? How did he get up there, you know? I would sit down and look at people who have already done it and basically, just, you know, see what's current. You know, listen to rap and hip hop radio, you know, or in right. my world, listen to pop radio. What is it that Panic at the Disco is doing now that they didn't do, you know, maybe 10 years ago? Because their sound is very different.
I bet it is. I've never personally mm-hmm. listened to them too much.
I haven't, like, in the last, like, I've listened to them a little bit to kind of, like, gain some knowledge and insight and see what's out there. Now I've listened to probably a little bit of everything.
So we're reaching the point now where we are going to go on break.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry, I'm adjusting my chair.
You're good.
So yeah, here in a minute, we're going to be having a little word from the sponsor. And then once that's done, you know, if you would like to take a few minutes and, you know, grab a drink or anything. Yeah. Yeah. And just let me know when you're all ready and we can hop back in, man.
Sweet. And it'll just play right here, or do I just leave the recording, or?
Yeah. Well, it'll just hop us back in, man.
Okay. So I'll just stay here.
We're going to hit finish.
Oh, gotcha.
And then, you know, I can clip the rest of this out and all that.
Perfect.
So.
Yeah, and then right. let me know. All right, thanks.
All right. And we are back.
What's going on?
All right, so to anybody still listening, welcome back. We are finally back from our break. And what I want to do now is, now that we've talked a lot about the business aspect of what you do, mm-hmm. I want to know about you as just a normal person. Like,
Sure.
What is like some interest, like what are some interesting things that you like to do outside of the music? Like what makes you you?
Yes, absolutely. So there is actually a couple things. I mean, definitely anything outdoors is pretty awesome. I'm just going to say that, you know, swimming, kayaking, hiking is actually really big here in Tennessee. You know, so one of my first things I did spending out here in the week is the first week I got here, I was really nervous and I was like, man, I just moved to Nashville. What do? I went out hiking. Now, if you know anything about Tennessee, there in Middle Tennessee area has so many beautiful waterfalls. Just, I can't describe it. You can't make that stuff up.
The only thing that I've ever seen in that area is just the highway.
So if you go slightly east, basically about an hour, actually 2 hours away from Nashville, you can actually see, which actually 2 hours really isn't even 2 hours if you think about it, because no one drives the speed limit down here, but recommended. But I
follow
love
the
hiking.
Laws, people. Follow the laws.
Follow the laws. Don't do, you know, I got a ticket for 42 over once, but let's just... I was having a day where I had to be somewhere. But anyway, cops are really cool down here if you're cool.
If you're nice, they're nice.
Yes, usually. It was kind of funny. I was like, oh shoot, I hope he's not gonna like totally like write me for a huge ticket. But no, he was like, nah, I'm just gonna write you for 16 over. And I was like, oh, what a nice guy.
Oh wow.
He didn't even write me the full ticket, but I know I'm not perfect, y'all.
None of us are, man.
No. Love hiking. When I was in Michigan, actually, I used to actually work for Art Van Furniture before they went out of business. Big furniture chain. I was a store manager there for 5 or 6 years, I want to say.
All right, are we good now?
Yes. Were you having connectivity with me, or was it?
It just showed that you were disconnecting.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah, so it was weird. So I just reset my stuff and...
Yeah, totally cool. I know living out here in Spring Hill, that's where my actual place is located. Shh, don't tell them that.
we'll try to bleep it out.
I always say Nashville because Nashville is just... It's a bunch of cities put together. You got Bellevue, Spring Hill, you know, all that stuff, but...
Oh, yeah. Georgia was the same way. You don't just live in Columbus.
Roach, same thing. Atlanta, same thing. Oh man,
yeah, it's all separated into like divisions, it feels like.
Yeah, but things I like to do, hiking, super awesome. I also am a video game nerd a little bit on the side, although I have a little bit less time for that as I used to.
But the question is what side are you on?
What side am I on? Are you talking Xbox?
Yeah. What side you want?
So I actually, it's so funny. It's hard to pick one, to be honest. Gosh, you put me in this position. All right. I'm going to have to say PlayStation.
PlayStation all day long.
Yes. And the reason I would go with that is because I actually grew up on the PlayStation 2 and the PlayStation 1. And, you know, I was still like... kind of understanding video games when the very first Kingdom Hearts came out. That was like the newest thing.
Beautiful games.
Yes,
hands down some of the greatest games I've ever played.
Absolutely. I actually have a knack. I collect old school video games on the side. It was so like growing up, because I'm a 90s kid, so you know, I was born in the 90s, but
old school Nintendo, man.
Yeah, Nintendo, Sega Genesis. I grew up on a lot of those.
Sega Genesis, heck yeah.
I had a grandma and grandpa that actually always had a Genesis, and we just, me and my brother loved to play it, hang out. Eventually, because I was the only one that expressed the interest in like, hey, I really want to preserve this and keep it in good condition, they just said, you can have it. And I was like, yes, got the most important thing in the entire house.
I'm not sure how to like really explain to people, because when I get into the topic of what do you like more when it comes to consoles, I tend to just tell them, well, I'm pretty biracial about it. I own PS2, PS3, PS4, Xbox. I own a Wii. I own a Switch. And I own a PC. I love all of it. Anything that revolves around games, I'm highly into it.
It's a super big, actually I had that opportunity because I do a little bit of like furniture sales as well. Cause I mean, being an artist, I'm gonna have to have some way to fund the music. Right.
Right.
So I do furniture. I'm a furniture rep here in the Nashville area. And I met a guy once and he was actually speaking of people that I've met, have you ever heard of a guy? I think he is a rap artist called Jelly Roll.
Yes.
Yeah. So he shopped at our store and I got the chance to meet him. And
he's very popular up here.
He is it was really cool to just, when he walked in the building, I mean, a lot of my friends went, you know who that is, right? And I'm like, but who is that? You know? And they were like, that's Jelly Roll. And I was like, wait, what? No way.
It's weird seeing people like that in person. It's like a whole different vibe around you.
It really is. And, you know, that's when you start to realize, like, here in Nashville, like, everybody's all on, like, one level. Like, we're all just people. You know, it's not uncommon. I've met, old country singer George Jones's wife, I believe it is. And then at one point, Alan Jackson as well.
Oh, wow.
There's
a name I know.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all just normal, everyday people. They just come in and they hang out, and they need furniture too.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean at some point you just want to say, hey, like, what's your story? You know, I mean, and a lot of people, like, the key to getting a relationship with anybody in the industry, literally find a way to serve them. Even if it's dumb, like, hey, like, can I like treat you to a cup of coffee sometime? Like, I'd love to just talk.
That's what I want. That's really what I want. I want to meet an idol and then just be like, hey.
Yeah.
Do you want to like just go on a walk?
Yeah, no. And to be honest, people in the industry are very much like that. Like, a lot of times they know that probably the reason you want to have coffee with them is because you probably want to like figure out how they did it. Right. I mean, that's every artist is probably like that. But here's the thing too. They're more open. Like, if people always ask like, well, how do I get a label to want to pick me up? Well, are you going to invite them to a cup of coffee, or are you going to ask them, hey, listen to my new hit single, which is probably not a hit anyway.
Right.
Just
for real.
Just to be honest with you.
That would be like me meeting my idol.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, yeah.
Meeting him and being like, instead of actually asking him like, hey, how did you do this? How did you do this? Just being like, hey, listen to this song I made.
Yeah. Honestly, if you ever meet one of your favorite idols,
I'm scared to.
Oh, it's nothing to worry about, man. No, seriously, it's so funny. The people that I've met over time, it's nuts. I've met a lot of crazy bands. All phenomenal people. I just can't say enough about the people that if you just treat them like a normal person, you will have earned their respect already, because everybody already treats them like they're like an idol. It's like, you know, if they're walking down the road and, you know, it's not uncommon, you might see the Rascal Flatts or Chris Tomlin or Toby Mac's actually really big in the Christian music. Franklin, Tennessee, which is like 20 minutes from where I live. Yeah. That is like an epicenter for music. You will meet everybody there.
Okay. So there's a one artist outside of the hip hop community, if I could meet them and actually talk to them, it would have to be Steven Tyler from Aerosmith.
Steven Tyler. Nice.
As a kid, that was the only band I listened to. I used to actually not even care for rap music. I'd listen to like one Eminem song here in a blue moon, but it was always Aerosmith. I would walk around with a cassette player listening to Aerosmith. If I bumped up to a CD Walkman,
I haven't seen in forever.
For real. All
right, if you're listening to this and you have a Walkman, honestly, you are a champion.
you are able to file for compensation.
Right. Used to be a joke of there was a video on TikTok I saw of where somebody from the 90s or 80s shows a current like 2000s baby. they show them like their young 8 or 10 year old kid. They say, "Here's a Walkman. What do you do with it?" And they just look at it and go, "Wait, what is it?"
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
You seen
about.
Those?
I think it's I've crazy. Seen that. Yeah, they're just looking at it like, "What is this?"
Because in today's music industry, like no one like CDs are even starting to become a little bit more obsolete. Like cars will have Bluetooth because you can just do it from Spotify right. or Apple, and so a lot of people are just looking at streams now.
That seems to be the most pinpoint thing that artists are trying to do is all stream.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an artist like me. I tend to burn CDs. If you want a hard album, you can have it. I will not care to burn you a CD.
Here's the thing. Never underestimate. I should probably correct myself. Never underestimate this thing called hard copy merch. Because... Right. In 10 years from now, it doesn't matter how popular of an artist you are. In 10 years from now, that is going to be vintage.
It will.
Actually, vinyls are making a comeback. So
love those.
Seriously? Like
I love them.
Like it is a grueling process. Like one vinyl is like almost twice, if not three times as expensive as making a CD.
Yeah, it is.
But like it is so worth it to say, hey, I'm doing a show. I've got, you know, and even don't even underestimate the like power of free CDs at first. If you're starting out, like, hey dude, like, is it okay if I give you a free CD?
Yeah, just check the stuff out, and if you like it, you know, yeah. give me a chance, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, you don't necessarily have to go up to a bunch of strangers, just start with friends and family. Like, hey, like,
I made a couple songs,
what do you think? Yeah,
exactly, you know? A lot of my friends and family own a hard copy CD of there my is a last album.
There's a popular hip-hop rock artist actually called Manifest. He started out exactly like that. Because back in the day, like that, I mean, shoot, even look at, what's his name, Toby Mac and the Newsboys. Those are big in the Christian music industry. But the trio of them, Kevin Max, Toby, and Michael Tate, they had cassettes back in their day.
Yeah, for real.
And they were in college going, all right. I don't know why, but I feel like let's do it. We got 200 or 2,000, I think, or maybe it might've been 2000. I don't know, but they had like a bunch of cassettes and said, all right, our job is to give these away. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we have to give away all of them. And they made it their mission to do that. And eventually the whole campus just knew about them. And I don't even know where the rest is history.
An easy solution, rent a plane, put them in a box, and fly the plane in the air and just throw them.
Just airdrop them.
Airdrop them. That's the best way to get your music out. If you're doing hard copy anything, cassettes or CDs, just chuck them out of a plane.
Like, I mean, definitely, like, in today's day and age, like, streaming may be, like, more popular and stuff. But, like, never underestimate, like, hey, I'm doing a show. Like, I don't care if it's local. Just coming in, do a show. I've got CDs. They're, you know, $5. When you purchase a CD, you're just basically helping me pop in to like do some more music, you know?
Exactly.
Because the way that trust me, like people will support you, especially like 90s babies like myself sometimes. Maybe you do have a CD player.
Maybe.
You just pop that bad boy in and just hang out for a little bit. I mean, you know?
Yeah. And also, I could see it too. If you had hard copy, maybe there's people out there that don't really care to pay for premium of, mm-hmm. you know, streaming apps.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there's a dude at the mall, normally when I see anybody at the mall mm-hmm. and they're handing out CDs, I will take one.
Never underestimate the power of, you know, CDs like that.
Exactly.
And actually, here's the other thing. You can listen to streams over and over and over, just like you can CDs. Yeah, it's easier, but here's the thing. You don't have nothing to sign.
Exactly. I mean, what am I going to do, sign your phone?
Nothing was more... Yeah, right, sign the side of your arm. No, I'm just kidding. It's actually funny. So CDs, like having stuff signed is actually an emotional experience. Like kids, I mean, dude, nothing was more... I don't even want to say... Maybe humbling is the best word to use, but nothing was more humbling when this kid walked up to me and was like, can you sign my football? And I was like, oh my gosh. Like,
oh my gosh.
Heck yeah, man. Like, I was like... I am totally going to sign that football, man.
have you had an experience? Oh, no, continue.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it was. Like he knew I did music and I don't remember how the conversation transpired, but he was like, can you sign my football? And I was like, dude, they don't need to know that you are, maybe you're not popular. That doesn't matter. The thing is, someone just thought of you as a role model.
Exactly.
I'm still technically part of the next generation of songwriters and artists, but the next generation, even after, you know, that's why I started doing artist development, is because sometimes you hear a lot about, here's what it takes to be a good songwriter, here's what it takes to be a good producer, but what about being a good artist? What about that third piece? And relationships.
Exactly.
Your fans. When we come back to Michigan, it's actually very sentimental for me, because that's my hometown. Coming back to Michigan. And there's going to be a lot of people there that maybe have known me before I even moved to Nashville. And for them, they're going to be like, he's actually doing it. Like, I'm kind of curious, you know, and I don't want to ruin that for them. And I want them to see, you know, someone who's authentic, that's not just singing a bunch of, you know, mumble jumble, you know?
Exactly. I've had experiences like that too. One of the first times that it's happened to me was at a fair.
That's awesome.
I was walking and I had barely even put anything out, but someone came up to me and they're like, hey, aren't you Ken Kiddo? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, dude, your music is awesome. And it's just little things like that, mm-hmm. that make you want to keep doing music.
Once you have a stamp on your community, like one of my friends actually in music said, hey, start with your community. If your community will appreciate and accept you, even if it's just free CDs, like eventually you can grow from there. Like, you know, like I said, just because if you're doing, I mean, there is a difference between commercial and local music. If you want to do local music, do it. You know, don't let commercialism hold you back.
Yeah, for real.
Mm-hmm.
It all normally starts with your community.
Exactly.
That's how you really get known, and that's how people from your community end up pushing you out there more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Like, I have people from here mm-hmm. who know my mm-hmm. music, and then I got a job way out of town, and while I'm working there, I'd have people come up to me and be like, hey, I know you from somewhere. Do you make music? And I'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like, wow, your music's really good. And I'm like, wow, even out here, they hear me too. And it's something yeah. else.
It goes. It really does. I got to say, like, it's amazing to me, like, how many people have, you know, reached out to just us on our band pages. You know, we've aired. So we're actually I think this is the next song that's coming out is going to be our fifth radio single, which most of it, what we do is like internet radio and stuff like that as well. We do have a couple of major stations that have picked us up in like other countries like Ireland. I mean, it's amazing. The Philippines has actually even become a major spot for us right now. And I'm just like, wow, like I may never meet these people, but they're being impacted.
It's always the thought too. I remember one of my songs off mm-hmm. my last album.
Yeah.
It out of nowhere, it was at like 500 views, and then mm-hmm. I had went to bed. It was at 500.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up and it had bumped up to 9,000 overnight.
Oof!
And it was
somebody's writing hits.
It was all from out of country, and that's what mm-hmm. I didn't understand. It was crazy. I don't know if it was a fluke, but hey, I'm gonna accept it, man.
People, like, it's fun. Music impacts people. Like, we have to understand, like, we live in America, and it's one of the most privileged countries in the world. Like, we have a lot at our disposal that we can use and make great music. And I mean, other countries see that and sometimes just like, you know, I really like what this person's made. And I think that's where the U.S. lacks sometimes, is we just lack of appreciation for one another, you know.
Exactly.
Just, hey, you know, you make rap music, I make pop music, I don't know, like, let's be friends.
I have, you know, really strong appreciation for people out of the country that do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, just today, me and my girlfriend, we both heard this dude from the Philippines.
Yeah.
And he has the most beautiful voice I've ever heard.
That is actually pretty intense. Yeah, that I've heard it. And I can always somebody else will have to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I've heard Filipinos love to sing. They usually, I don't even know. It's just one of those culture things. They love to sing, and they're usually pretty darn good.
Yeah, maybe. They are. Same with Korean.
Yeah,
Korean music. Mm-hmm. Japanese. Yeah, I've
they're classically trained too when they start. Exactly. I think.
It's there's a label. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but they're called 88 Rising.
It sounds familiar. There's a lot of labels, but it sounds familiar.
They're like a mixture of like hip hop, soul, like R&B. There's just a huge group of people that are all. It's like an Asian based record label.
Yeah.
One of my favorite artists, Joji, is on that label.
Joji.
Absolutely. That's amazing.
That's a name I never I only thought that my roommate knew who he was.
That man is amazing. I love his music.
Mm-hmm. There's so many artists out there, really good ones.
There's the thing that I didn't like was the record label was having like a worldwide tour. And it was like right before COVID hit.
Yeah.
And they were coming to America and they were going to stop at a town near mine. I was going to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And all the comments on the post showing that they were going to be here was all, is there going to be subtitles? Because if not, then I'm not going.
What?
And that really bothered me. And it's like, these people put a lot of time and effort into this. And everybody's just trashing on them. And that made me so mad.
It's funny that isn't it funny how sometimes we as people, you know, because think about this, we've had lots of people from America go out and do tours in Mexico and, you know, South Africa and
they accept us.
They do. And they actually don't even care if they even know your, they actually, to be fair, they may already know your lyrics. And the thing is, if you're doing an international tour like that, you probably do already know their lyrics.
Exactly.
And at that point there's some sort of, and that's why I say music is such an emotional attachment. Like, so people before we even had, you know, this idea of electronic music of any sort, people made music with what they just had in front of them. And they danced, they sang, sometimes didn't even have any real words to it. Maybe it sounded like an incantation to some of us. I don't know. It's 2021, but the thing is, it created an emotional attachment. There was something there. You can hear someone when they sing a song that's got sadness in there. You can hear when someone's got joy or when they've got even sometimes anger without even realizing. You know, it just,
yeah.
There's an emotional attachment that comes from the lyric, and that's why I tell people when you're doing the recording, you can tell what's manufactured. When you go in and record vocals, the vocals is where the magic happens. Production just backs it because exactly. nothing can replace passion for what you're doing. And if you're called to be an artist out there, I mean, I'll tell you, be passionate. Do not stop because you can use me as an example, but I didn't stop. I kept going and I got lots of no's and eventually I got enough yeses and here I am.
I've told a lot of people before, because I get people that ask me about my process when it comes to how I do my music, and it's just don't give up and make sure you're putting your feelings into your stuff. I feel like as of late I've kind of lost my passion and I'm trying to find it again, because it seems like every time I write a song it doesn't seem like me, and then I end up putting myself down and it's like, nah, This just doesn't seem like me. I shouldn't do this. And
I would encourage you, man. If you've never done them before, find some people to co-write with, even too. Like, wear your heart on your sleeve. Like, serve one another. Like you know, come up to one of your rapper buddies and say, "Hey, man, I'm trying to write a song. I wonder if maybe you could help me on it." You know, and obviously, even splits in the room. I mean, you know, as far as all that goes, but like, I would definitely encourage you on that. Or as far as like being, when you're looking for inspiration, as far as like your own story goes, sometimes you do have days where you just show up in the room and you're like, man, I didn't contribute much. You know that song that came out with that Tony Wood guy I was telling you about? Believe it or not, in that co-write, I walked in the room and went, oh gosh, I have nothing to provide. I am the bane of everyone's existence right now. I literally provided maybe a couple verses in the chorus. But I was in the room. And therefore, next year came around and they emailed me and said, hey, you were in the room. I wanted to thank you for this. You helped. We're going to put you on the song. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's all so right. Cool.
I can do this. And so I showed up to a room and I had nothing. Well, later on in 2020, I was in a co-write with a brand new artist and they felt the same way I did. They said, man, I feel like you're writing the whole song, Josh. I said, no, because you told me the vision. You told me the vision for what you wanted. So I'm trying to help you put it into some words, put it into some feeling. You know, and that, you know, that's just the way that I can serve somebody else and help them make their song. Because here's the thing. If you're co-writing, if that song goes big, guess what? You go big, both of you.
So I got one question for you.
Sure, man.
So, you know, when it comes to when you finally start getting a grasp of, you know, what you're doing with your music and with your sound of your music, is there any advice that you want to give to people who might hear this about how they can successfully distribute their music? Because I get asked that a lot, like, how do I distribute? How am I putting my music out?
Yeah, wonderful question, actually. Best thing I can tell people to do, you'll need a distributor first. So obviously when you're doing songs, you want to first register and make sure your song is registered with either, for America, you've got ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. ASCAP and BMI are the two, because CSAC is invite only, but ASCAP and BMI, those are performance rights organizations. That's how you would, you know, get credited for each of your songs that you do. After that, you'll need to get what's called a distributor. So I Apple and everything will not take any songs from anybody unless you have a distributor. One of my favorites to use, actually, and you can use any of them, there's lots of them out there. I use DistroKid.
That's the one I use.
DistroKid is really great. You know, you pay like what, one yearly fee, I think.
Yeah, I think it's $20 a year.
Yeah, right, and that's cheap. And the thing is, you get infinite amount of placements.
Yep.
And so after that, then you can focus on, you know, your Spotify playlisting. So my biggest thing is, like, as an artist, what you're going to need to learn to do is to be able to delegate, you know, your money where you want to delegate wisely so you're not wasting money. And believe me, I've been there. I have wasted money.
For real.
Yeah, right. You had to learn somehow. But yeah, I love DistroKid. Honestly, they'll put your stuff on Spotify, iTunes. You don't maybe need the like top of the line thing. Just maybe like I think it's the middle option. I can't remember which one it is, but it's like, that's the one I would use.
Are we talking about the plans where you can have multiple artists on one plan together?
Yeah, you only need to have the one that like gives you enough so you can see stats and stuff. But DistroKid's great. ASCAP will cover anything that's like performance royalties, because that's the biggest thing too, and you know, making sure that you get credits for what you do. Mechanical royalties will be what your Spotify playlisting, but see, if someone were to perform your song live, so in the Christian music world, we have what's called CCLI. That is a Christian licensing. So every time a church plays a worship song, they actually have to pay CCLI so they can pay the artist for making the song. It's actually part of just kind of, you know, the requirements. If you perform somebody's song live, you're supposed to do that. Now, granted, bar bands and stuff like that, they play covers all day long. Under the Table, totally cool. But if you were out here in Nashville pulling that, you gotta be careful with that one.
Very careful.
But DistroKid, all day long.
They are not sponsoring this episode, but I'm just saying right now, DistroKid, if you're hearing this, you need to sponsor me. I'm plugging you right now, and you should be sponsoring this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, there are other ones you can use too. CD Baby actually is a little bit more costly, but they do have a few more functions that DistroKid doesn't. But if you're someone, you know, just starting out, and if you were anything like I was a broke college kid. I ain't got no money.
You're in debt right now. You're in college. You're more than likely in debt.
Right. No, I did for sure. I exactly. So I said, you know what? Let's do this. You know, and trust me, hard work pays off. They say put in your 10,000 hours and you will have made it big. That is so true. It took me, let's see, if I started my first single in 2016, 2017, okay, 3 years later, and I was diligently, you know, working hard, you know, and then I finally landed a radio single, you know, and it took me at least 3 years to do it. And it's going to be longer before I even end up, you know, anywhere near like label ready music, which is whole nother genre of its own.
Exactly. A lot of people like to assume that they're going to put out, you know, a few songs and the next mm-hmm. thing you know, they're blowing up.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
You got to be super lucky.
Yeah, but I will say relationships, I mean, those are so key and so important. If you have a heart that says, I want to think of somebody else over myself, but I'm going to tell you, you're going to go play. You're going to go far.
Exactly.
I would not have the connections and producers. I mean, there's so many producers at this point that I'm friends with that I'm like, gosh, we got to do a project together. I mean, one of my friends actually produced for Toby Mac's Ionic album, if you follow him at all. And he was like, yeah, we got to do a project together. I'm like, gosh, how did I ever get on the level where I'm allowed to do a project with you?
I actually met, are you familiar with Royce da 5'9"?
I'm not.
He's a rapper that works really heavily with Eminem.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I met his producer.
Mm-hmm.
It was a while back. I was at a little function. Yeah. I met him, and he explained to me about, you know, who he was and who he worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled him aside later that night, and I was like, hey, man. I was just curious if you would like to hear some of my songs. And then, you know, if you would like to exchange numbers, then we can probably work together. And mm-hmm. he was super down with it. I showed him a song. He absolutely loved it. And he gave me his number. And
yeah.
He says, whenever you want a beat, man, just let me know and I'll send you one.
That's so awesome. See, and that's literally how I ended up with the producers that I have. I literally call them up. And I was like, hey, I noticed one of the guys, for example, he's actually a touring musician as well. So you can like hire him for like shows and stuff. But he came to town. I realized, oh, he moved. So I gave him a Facebook message. I'm like, yo, bro, you want to go get coffee sometime? It took us a couple weeks, but we sat down and I just heard his heart and he was just like, yeah, man, next time you want to do a production, let me know. And I was like, is that it? Wow. I didn't even have to ask for this. And you'll be really shocked the power of just, let's say this in sales as well, but ask for the sale, you know, hey, would you want to do a project together maybe sometime? Most of them, if you're having coffee with them, most of them know why you're there anyway. Might as well just be up front.
Exactly. But this is a nice gesture though.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, finding ways to serve them, you know, hey, tell you what, like maybe if you need help in the studio, I can roll some chords for you.
Exactly. It's always really good to reach out, you know,
mm-hmm.
meet new people because you never know who you're going to meet.
That's how you and I met. I'm pretty sure it was just a Facebook comment. And I was like, yeah, if it'll help somebody else out. I mean, that's really big on my heart is I don't mind serving people. And if I have some spare time, like I'll reach out, you know, and that's all it takes.
Exactly. That's why I started the podcast. It was to talk to other artists, you know, like, because if I can get you out, it's going to help get my podcast out at the same time. It's kind of like a working relationship. I'm here to help people, you know, people who are trying to get known, because people are going to listen to my podcast and they're going to think, hey, I like this guy. I like his music. And then you got a new potential fan.
Of course. Yeah. It works very much hand in hand. I mean, you know, that's one of the benefits to, you know, doing I call them partnerships or friendships or whatever you call them. I mean,
right.
part of the reason that we advertise co-writes so much is, guess what? if everybody's getting paid on one song, I mean, let's be real. Y'all are going to share it because y'all are excited.
Exactly.
I mean, nothing is more, actually, this is a hip hop pop song, but is a song by an artist. His name is Josh Snyder. The song Feel It. Actually, I was a writer on that, and that is a, I did not expect him to call me back later and be like, hey, I just want you to know that we decided to cut it. And now there's going to be a music video dropping soon.
Oh, wow.
As per his Facebook page. So I'm waiting patiently to be like, yo, that's, and nothing is more amazing for a songwriter. I don't even have to sing the darn song. I'm just glad that somebody said, hey, I see this as a value, and now we're friends, and now I might do a show in Montana someday. Who knows? Because that's where he's from.
Right.
So you just never know.
You really don't.
Make friends, serve one another. Eventually you might get asked to do a show in Montana. Who knows?
I have no clue how many friends I've made just through music alone. I do believe that is pretty much how I met almost all of my friends. It was through music.
Yeah, dude.
Some of my best friends now, I met one of them just because he showed up to one of my shows.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt it one bit, man. I don't doubt there's going to be a couple of shows we'll end up doing. And, oh, hey, yeah, I heard your music, like, the other day.
Exactly.
You know, it's just, we're going to be, in about less than 3 weeks here, we're going to actually be in Virginia Beach playing a show, actually. And one of the ways we got hooked up is because we both share the same radio station. We're both part of the same radio plays. And then we both knew a couple of people on the station. And so eventually we were looking for shows, and he just comments underneath, y'all should come to Virginia Beach. And I was like, you got a promoter? Because if you have a promoter or just a point of contact or a pastor, whoever, we'd love to come. And sure enough, there in goes the message, and there goes the show.
That's actually one thing. that's one thing a lot of people that I know actually want to do, is they want to get their songs on the radio. Like, if they make a mm-hmm. song, they really like it, they would like to put it on the radio.
Yeah.
So how do you go through doing that?
Yes. So when it first came out, part of what you want to do, and this is where the commercial aspect kind of comes in, radio is very, very, very picky. So the radio will probably, especially in commercial side, I mean, so for the Christian industry, good luck. If you're an indie artist and you're trying to get on K-Love or Air One, you're going to need to be a part of a label. Because some stations will only accept label stuff. You have to be careful, because they will say words like no unsolicited music. So getting your stuff on radio first means you'll need to have a product that is very good. So, right. And even our stuff, I'm actually shocked that some of the stations took what we had, because I looked at it and went, okay, this could be better. I mean, I can nitpick all day long on my own stuff. I'm the biggest, I mean, artists, you'll be the biggest judge of yourself.
Exactly. That is so true.
But getting your stuff on radio is as simple as, like, sometimes an email, like what you'll do. So you want to get to know your, like, for rap and hip hop, you'll want to get to know what the radio station is first. Maybe, so for Michigan, this, because I know there's a couple of them in Michigan as well. It might start with an email like saying, hey, you know, my name is Josh Feta, and I do, you know, pop and rock stuff. And I was just curious if, you know, do you guys accept like submissions? And if so, how could I do that? Or who should I contact? Because you want to make sure you open up the door to, you know, let them know, you know, that you do want to make a submission, but also know the station. Don't submit a rock or a rap song to a jazz station, because that won't go well.
Yeah.
But usually you'll do that. Now, if you are within close proximity, I'd say if you can drive there, even if it's 2 hours away, maybe ask them and say, hey, I'd love to maybe submit a song, but I was just curious if maybe I could swing. I'm going to be in your town on X day, and maybe do you care if I just swing by and just say hello? You don't even have to take my song. Just say hello. Because that in-person meeting, that's going to mean a lot. The other thing you can do too, and if you do this, I can guarantee you radio stations will drop their jaw. Electronic press kits are great, but if you have a physical press kit, dude, even labels don't even get those anymore.
Man.
A press kit will typically have, it'll have a bio, it'll have picture, like headshots, photos of the entire band, like printed out. It'll have tours that you've done, maybe two CDs in there, one or two of them. It'll be like a full-on folder. You hand that to them and radio people will just drop their jaw and be like, we don't even get this from labels.
It's like handing them a resume almost.
It is exactly what you're doing, yeah. But getting your stuff on radio is truly relational. Now, I'll tell you a story of actually what happened to mine real quick too. So I got on one radio station and I was thrilled. I was super excited. Well, little did I know, three other radio stations are friends with this guy, which means they were looking to see if his stuff was playing. So one of my songs actually ended up a number one on this guy's station.
Oh, wow.
And so what happened, that was actually our song Love Wins that I sent you. That was the number one played on his station. It was requested and it was just the thing that everybody liked it. So anyway, after that, I got a message from another station and then another one. They said, hey, I'm just curious, how many songs you got? Do you got a few that you'd be interested in sending us? And what I didn't know is that stations are all friends with each other because they know what's popular, right? And you're always doing something because you always want to make sure that you're, as an artist, sending music to a radio promoter that actually works for their audience. That's where the commercial side comes in. And so that's the long spiel of how to get your stuff on radio. Start with the product, end with a relationship.
It's like going into Shark Tank.
A little bit, yeah. And you will get a lot of no's. At first you may get a ton, but you know what? Learning, like, if you get a lot of no's the first time, no sweat.
Don't give it
a little bit. Maybe look at your product and then look at what's currently playing on rap stations or hip hop stations. Find out what's big. Because Eminem is still big, but what about the new ones? Who's new that is killing it? If they're killing it, try and get your sound. Now, you don't have to get your voice. I'm not talking about your voice, but your sound quality needs to be there. Is the bass really rumbling in your stomach? Like, you know, I mean, that's a thing. You know, just things like that. Pay attention to how they're sounding and get your songs to have that same sort of affection, if you want to say. And then
it's a very, very weird side for the hip hop community now, because it's like the newer genre that's out, what people like to call mumble rap.
Yeah.
That seems to be more of what people like nowadays. So it's like they're trying to target that kind of audience more.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't really like to do that kind of music.
Yeah, that's a thing.
So many good artists, man. I'm telling you, there's so many good artists.
There are.
And they don't get the kind of appreciation they deserve because they don't make songs about, you know, doing drugs and having sex and, you know, all this stuff. They actually have a message.
There's a trick to that, actually. So we kind of joke about it in the Christian music industry because Christian music is actually a really, really small, very hard niche to kind of put yourself in. Just because, like, it's based, like, radio is built on familiarity. Like, what are people familiar with, you know? And it works the same in all of them, really. But one of the hardest things to do was to write a radio song, because for Christian music, it meant almost like, well, for some of us, it made it feel like we had to write. We joked about it and called it the Tickle Me with Jesus song. And we say that because you'd get on and hear like worship, like Phil Wickham or Casting Crowns. Like, these are that kind of sound. But that's what people were familiar with, like the Mercy Me sound. And then that would be our radio single. And then when they listen to the rest of our sound, they hear like all of our real stuff, you know? So I will say, if you're targeting radio, write for what they like, write for what they're looking for. That's the hopeful goal. I mean, definitely don't sacrifice what you're doing. Like, don't try too hard to write a hit song.
Exactly. Don't try too hard, because it probably won't turn out the way you're expecting it to.
Exactly. There is a part to say, write what the stations might want, but don't overdo it.
Don't destroy yourself and what you're building to, you know,
yes,
get to other people. Stick to yourself, but, you know, if it really comes down to it, try to just morph into what people like a little bit.
Yeah.
While it's staying yourself.
Exactly. It's exactly that. And trust me, right, if you have a good product, like, just get yourself a good producer. If you can't produce like me, because, I mean, I'm terrible at it, I'll tell you that up front. I hire producers and musicians because I cannot play instruments, and nor can I actually produce. I actually hire people out, but I can sing, and I'm phenomenal at, like, business stuff and connections, and that's just what I excel at. It's okay to do that. People are going to come to you, you know, Tommy, and say, hey, I need a beat. I really just can't produce. And part of your job is figuring out, hey, how can I serve this artist? How can I make this song come to life? You know, as they call it.
Also, speaking on the production side, a lot of people tend to use YouTube beats here in, you know, mm-hmm. the hip hop aspect of things. I'm not really sure how it works for, you know, the pop side, but
yeah,
people like to use YouTube beats, which they also need to take into mind, like the whole thing mm-hmm. with leases and the whole crediting and all mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, and, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, there's got to be, like, an aspect of that on your side. So, like, when it comes to, like, that kind of stuff, like, what would you say to people who might be listening?
Yeah, so if you're doing beat connections, this is going to be, this might sound insane, but never, 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 never use YouTube beats. Now, here's the trick to that. So I have a pop producer actually here in Nashville. So he actually makes everything. Now, once you understand kind of what DAWs do what, like, for example, I use Logic a lot as an example, because for digital instrumentation, Logic is the most user-friendly, but it's also, like, it's got a wide variety. Now, every single DAW system, you use what you're greatest at. But the mark of a really great producer, never use YouTube beats, because, number one, you just said copyright, a big thing. Even if it's free to use, that means that beat is going to be everywhere. Like, who knows how many people could have used it. If you, exactly. you'll make one from the start. I would definitely say that's the mark of, and that might be where, as an artist, you might say, hey, I need to really get a producer that makes these from scratch. And sometimes exactly. And here's the best part about it. That happens even in the co-write room. When you're making that demo, guess what you're doing? Start a beat. You just get a couple of kicks, maybe let it roll, and you sit there on repeat. The most annoying thing you'll ever hear. But you're gonna be writing to that. And then, oh, wait, what if we did this in that spot? Okay, let's add that. Now you're doing the same verse, but then doing one thing different. Before you know it, you know, the average co-write for me, even for pop and pop music, it takes 3 hours.
It takes a long time to actually just get what you're going for.
Yeah, and you know what? There is nothing wrong with, you know, sitting down and using a YouTube beat to get started. But the ultimate goal is, when you're producing your songs, don't use a YouTube beat. Just get one that's made specially for you.
Exactly.
That's what I would do.
You also got to find something that can really, like, you know, speak to mm-hmm. you in a way. Because it's really hard to find something that fits your style and the way you're trying to sound. And you're not going to mm-hmm. get that 100% through YouTube beats.
Yeah, there's a mark. There's the mark of a mastery on production is being able to do that from start. Seth Mosley, I'll never forget this. When I sat in the room and watched him make a demo, that guy is a whiz. We sat down. He's like, "All right, what's on your heart? We were thinking about it. He's like, all right, what do you think about this? And he like, within 20 seconds, this dude had a drum. And he's like, all right, here's some digital drums. Okay, cool. What about some guitar? Let's add some of that. You know, because we were working with the melodies. And, you know, for him, he could just drop instrumentation. And before you know it, he was like, all right, let's add some bass. And it just, it took time, but, you know, that's the part. Don't rush the process.
Just Absolutely not.
Start at the beginning. Literally, I mean, you can even take GarageBand on your phone nowadays. You can type in just a beat. You know, it's just like that. Just use something simple. And then once you get enough money to have like Logic or something, or if you already have it, pop that bad boy in there and just start with a kick, maybe a snare, maybe add some extra cymbals, or maybe start messing around with synth or sound effects. And if you don't know what to use, find someone who does.
Exactly.
That there's a joke that I used to tell and say, if that old fart don't know, go ask an even older fart, because they probably know.
I like that. I like that a lot.
You know, because, I mean, it comes with some experience. You're not going to know on day one. But day two, you might, you know, see someone and say, hey, I'm just curious. Would you want to sit down and do a co-write sometime? And then watch what they do. You'd be surprised.
You can learn some stuff. You really can. And if you don't have anyone like that around you, there's always tutorials. You can.
Oh, absolutely.
You can go on YouTube and just look up how to make a beat from scratch, and somebody will teach you, and they'll show you stuff that you can use for either free, or if you got money to spend, and you can buy something. And it's a process. Tinker with
your DAW. Literally, yeah. It sounds as dumb as it sounds. Tinker with it. You're gonna also learn different techniques that just people use, and not even just in rap and hip hop. Eventually, I'm gonna tell you, producers can make, you know, a good decent living. If you think you can be a producer and do that full time, the answer is yes. There's lots of people that do it.
DJ Khaled is an example.
Oh, exactly. That guy, I mean, he's literally a DJ. That's what he does.
He makes millions off of other people's music.
Exactly. All he does is produce sometimes, a lot of times too. And the producer, one of the greatest joys that they have, and I can say this because any one of the producers that I've worked with all would definitely agree with this. Nothing makes you more happy than saying, hey man, like, I'd love to do a project with you. And then, so the producer gets paid. So you're doing them a favor, you know, and then they're going to help make your song awesome. Exactly. Cause here's the thing. It's their business too. If they make a song and it's crappy, guess what? Y'all ain't going nowhere.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Well, all right. I think now would probably be a good time to end this episode. I really want to say thank you, man, for taking the time. I think this is actually my longest episode so far. We've had a lot to talk about.
Yeah, no worries, man. Thanks for inviting me. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate you coming and dropping some knowledge, man. It's very eye-opening even for me, man. I really appreciate it.
No worries, man. Anytime, seriously.
This has been the KGT podcast, and I appreciate everyone for listening. Everybody, have a good night. You have a good night too, Josh. It was really great having you on.
All right. Take care, man.
All right. Peace out.
Peace out.